This episode of Shameless is brought to you by Uniqlo. Shop Uniqlo's range of high quality and affordable knitwear now.
Might have seen the movies because the relationship between Elvis and Priscilla is one of the most fascinating celebrity stories of all time. But the films only tell so much, and the nitty-gritty details, well, they're just next level. Welcome to Scandal from Shameless Podcast, the stories of the biggest celebrity controversies revisited. Now you know.
Hello, hello.
Part three, baby.
Part three of three. And let's have a quick chat about what we spoke about in the last episode because we have so much more to get through. Now, at the start of the last episode, we spoke about how Priscilla basically moved across the world to finish school and live with Elvis. That move also coincided with Elvis breaking it off with Anita officially, which was good of him.
He's such a decent guy. Yeah. After that, a little while later, there were widespread reports that Elvis was cheating on Priscilla with his co-star Anne Margaret on the set of Viva Las Vegas.
Yeah, now that also included random reports that they were engaged as well, which Priscilla was understandably unhappy about. Now, at this point as well, I think it's important to note Elvis's career was kind of flailing. His public image was kind of cringe. And in his personal life, he had this intense fascination with philosophy and religion. He would hold Bible readings at his home for his fans. He also very much got into horses, which
loved
I guess
horses,
is
yep.
a religion in and of itself.
Yeah. Now, Elvis and Priscilla did finally get engaged. A proposal happened around Christmas time in 1966 when Priscilla was 21 and Elvis was 31. Before we rewind and take you back to that point in time, we're going to take you back to 1967. We just want to give you guys a bit of a heads up. This episode will deal with multiple confronting themes. So if you have little ears around, just keep that in mind. It's a heavier episode, naturally, than the ones we've done previously.
Yeah, I also think to be self-aware, it's hard for us to define what those heavy things are because Priscilla herself doesn't define them in perhaps the same way that I might. Mm.
And she was the only one there.
Exactly, so. And it's her story. So if that trigger warning sounds vague, that's why. Let's rewind now all the way back to 1967.
All right, Zara, as we said, Elvis and Priscilla at the end of episode two had just gotten engaged. We're now in 1967. Priscilla's parents were absolutely ecstatic that she was about to become a Presley. As Priscilla put it in her memoir, in the 5 years I'd lived with Elvis, I would rarely let my parents discuss marriage. The possibility of their daughter being hurt was foremost in my parents' minds. Now they no longer had to worry whether they'd made the right decision in allowing me to leave home at such a young age.
Yes. Now, before we get to the actual wedding, it's important to remind you, as I said, Elvis's career wasn't in a great state at this point. As per the conversation, while the Beach Boys were making classic albums like Pet Sounds, Elvis was singing movie soundtrack songs about pet dogs, cows, and shrimps.
It's not God. Giving hot career.
Not the shrimps. Now, to make matters worse as well, he was also having money problems. As per the LA Times, Priscilla had never gotten involved with budgets during her time with Elvis, but she knew that the only thing Elvis ever did with money was spend it. He didn't just buy things for himself. He also loved giving friends and even strangers Cadillacs and other things he knew they couldn't afford.
By 1967, his income from movies and music had decreased. As per the conversation, Elvis's movie box office receipts fell, critics were less impressed with each release, and the records from the soundtracks no longer climbed as far up the charts. And as per Priscilla's memoir, unfortunately, Elvis's father, Vernon, and Elvis were leery of business matters requiring financial advice. Vernon operated on pure instinct, refusing any suggestion of tax breaks, which he found too complicated to consider. He let the IRS figure Elvis's taxes.
Very interesting.
Very risky.
Super risky. Now, on top of all of this around this time, Colonel Parker made official changes to what he called his partnership with Elvis Presley. Now, while the finer details of the deal were a little complicated, the thing you need to know is that the Colonel upped his management commission from 25% to 50%. So I guess you could say this level of spending from Elvis was super unsustainable, and things were about to get even more expensive because Elvis and Priscilla decided to purchase a ranch in Mississippi.
Priscilla wrote of this, "I thought of this ranch as a wonderful way for us to get away from Graceland from time to time. My picture was of us alone without an entourage. The ranch cost $500,000 back then. In 2024 terms, that's about $4.5 million USD. Elvis had to put up Graceland as collateral in order to even get the loan. I mean, it's crazy to me he would need a loan to buy this ranch given his level of success."
Yeah, you're bang on, 100%. And that you'd put up such an iconic and, I don't know, long-standing home like Graceland as collateral. But it was done. The ranch was purchased, and he also bought 18 horses and a herd of cattle as well. Now, within 2 weeks of buying a ranch, Elvis spent a further $100,000 on a suite of trailer homes so his entourage could stay at the ranch as well. So much for that dream of Priscilla's.
Obviously, the ranch made their money problems drastically worse. As per Careless Love, it was an orgy of spending. God, I love that term. That seemed to momentarily pacify Elvis but horrified his father, who was sure that they were all going to end up in the poorhouse.
Yeah, I can imagine as well. And there's still a lot of anxiety about getting back to where you once were, yourself back where you once were.
He's very impulsive as well. I think it's just part and parcel with the things that made Elvis really loved and really successful were also his Achilles heel at certain times.
Totally.
He's just such an impulsive guy.
Yeah. Now, the Colonel promptly committed Elvis to yet another movie to cover the cost. And it was like this self-fulfilling cycle, right? Now, shooting that movie, it was a beach party romp called Clambake, actually depressed Elvis so much that he gained a fair bit of weight. And in response, the film studio ordered him to lose it, which meant adding even more pills to his already kind of plentiful supply. And this time, Mish, it was diet pills.
Yeah, it was around this time that he was linked up with a guy colloquially called Dr. Nick. Dr. Nick became the one who was in charge of treating Elvis, and his name will come up again in this series. It's actually a really important name to remember.
Yeah, so this was kind of the vibe of Elvis and Priscilla's lives in the lead up to their wedding. Elvis was stressed about money and being a provider, not just for his family and Priscilla, but his friends too. He was also depressed about his career and was on a plethora of pills just to cope. Priscilla, meanwhile, desperately tried to do anything to make Elvis happy. It's not kind of the run up to the wedding you'd maybe want.
No.
Regardless, the wedding took place on May 1, 1967, so pretty quick turnaround between engagement and wedding. The ceremony lasted 8 minutes.
Yeah, interesting. In classic Colonel Parker style, he booked a press conference to take place between the ceremony and the reception. During that press conference, Priscilla's father told reporters, "We had known from the beginning that Elvis and Priscilla would be married someday. Our little girl is going to be a good wife." For all the fuss, Priscilla seemed to have wanted just some like alone time with her husband. As per her memoir, "I would have given anything for one moment alone with him. But we were immediately rushed out for a photo session, then a nationwide press conference, and finally a reception with more photographers." That is my worst nightmare for a wedding day.
It's so interesting because we talk a lot about maybe celebrities in 2024 having like direct communication with their audience and social media and sort of being so exposed with paparazzi and all of those kinds of things and not having a lot of privacy, which is true. But I think the flip side of that is back in the 60s, you had to do things like this to stay relevant and you don't see that anymore. So it's kind of just an interesting comparison to make. Now that Elvis and Priscilla were married, they could finally have sex according to Elvis's personal rules anyway. Priscilla wrote of their wedding night, "I know that as I went from child to woman, the long, romantic, yet frustrating adventure that Elvis and I had shared all seemed worthwhile. As old-fashioned as it might sound, we were now one. It was special. He made it special like he did with anything he took pride in."
The thing is, Elvis didn't want Priscilla to be on the birth control pill, which was fairly new at the time. He had the reasoning that it hadn't been perfected yet and that there were all kinds of side effects. Sure enough, not long after their wedding, Priscilla fell pregnant. But Priscilla did have mixed feelings about the pregnancy, which is interesting. Meanwhile, Elvis was totally stoked.
Yeah, 100%. She wrote, "I loved seeing Elvis happy, but I was still uncertain about how my unexpected pregnancy would affect our marriage. This was supposed to have been our time alone. I wanted to be beautiful for him. Instead, my debut as Elvis's bride was going to be spoiled by a fat stomach, puffy face, and swollen feet. I intended to prove that a pregnant woman did not have to get fat."
This is the most depressing thing I have. I'm so depressed reading that.
Yeah, 100%. It's like, I understand why she wanted her time alone with him as part of it, just to be his wife. But second to that, it's very of the time and very of the industry and what we expected of women and women in the public eye. And I don't even know if that much has changed.
No. According to several of Elvis's friends, Priscilla continued riding her horse while pregnant and one day took a pretty major fall. It was like she was very committed despite being pregnant and then heavily pregnant. She wanted to be the same. She wanted nothing to change. As per Careless Love, everyone marveled at her gutsiness and determination to keep going, even if some wondered about her common sense. Elvis tried to get her to promise to be more careful in the future, but in Priscilla's mind, it was part of a pact she had made with herself. She was going to have to show the same kind of reckless abandon that Elvis did if she wanted to be able to maintain any degree of self-respect.
God, it's tough to read. Now, like we said, Elvis was excited about the baby. He was attentive to Priscilla and called her constantly to check in, which, I mean, sounds like the bar's quite low, but we have to remember when she was in Germany, he didn't call her at all. As per Careless Love, Elvis told reporters at the time, "This is the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. We really hadn't planned to have a baby this soon. When Priscilla told me the good news, at first I was so shocked I didn't think I could move for a while. Then it began to dawn on me that this is what marriage is all about."
The good old Colonel had something to say to the reporters too. He said, "I've already got a contract drawn up for the new Presley singer." So Elvis was happy that this baby was on the way, but he also had moments of being quite erratic during the pregnancy as well. 7 months in, he actually told Priscilla that he wanted to take a break. According to the books we've read, he said something along the lines of, "Scylla, I have to have some time to think. Things just aren't going right. It'll be good for the two of us to take a little time off, like a trial separation, be apart from each other for a while." She's 7 months pregnant.
Yeah, this story is also really confusing. Priscilla said she was blindsided by this. And I think one of the only places that spoke of this was in her book. And then the story got confusing because then nothing happened. So he didn't leave, she didn't leave, they never raised it again, but she still has told this story. So we know that he kind of had a moment of freaking out.
In the movie, it comes across like she called his bluff, maybe. She was like, okay. And then he turned around and was like, wait, no, I don't want that at all. Like he wanted an argument or something?
Well, in her book as well, she said something similar to the effect of, and I'm paraphrasing here because I don't have it written down, to the effect of, well, you don't deserve me then, which may have been exactly that, like calling his bluff. Now, Priscilla claimed that she later learned that Elvis was just worried about how a baby would affect his life and if his fans would accept him as a father. And as I said, they continued on after this conversation as if it never happened. Now, when the time came for Priscilla to have the baby, Elvis was right there with her. I think it's also interesting to note, she's also admitted she couldn't leave to go to the hospital until her hair and makeup had been applied. She said, "I disappeared calmly into the bathroom and applied my ever so black mascara and teased my ever so black hair. Later at the hospital, I requested special permission to keep on my double set of lashes."
According to Careless Love, Elvis was incredibly nervous when Priscilla went into labor. The book reads, "He was practically beside himself when Priscilla insisted on taking a shower and applying her makeup after her water broke, but then he wasn't ready himself even after she was standing at the door and he had to be reminded by his grandmother that it was Priscilla, not he, who was having the baby."
Nice. Now, Lisa Marie Presley was born on February 1, 1968. Priscilla noted in Elvis and Me that this was a particularly happy time in her life with Elvis. She said, "The man in my hospital room that day was the man I loved and will always love. He didn't have to act the part of Elvis Presley, superstar. He was just a man, my husband."
When Priscilla, Elvis, and little Lisa Marie, plus Elvis's entourage, left the hospital, there were about 100 fans and nurses gathered around the hospital entrance. After the ad break, guys, we're going to tell you what happened after Lisa Marie was brought home.
Affairs.
Guys, the temperature is cooling down now that we've stepped into autumn, which makes it perfect timing for today's sponsor, Uniqlo. Uniqlo has an incredible knitwear collection thoughtfully designed to be worn every day.
I have to say, Mish, picking out what to wear in the mornings can be time consuming, especially now we're entering a transitional season, so layering is crucial. With Uniqlo, personalizing your collection of reliable go-to pieces is easy. You can get comfort without sacrificing on style.
Looking through their collection, there are so many pieces that can become staples in your wardrobe. Throwing on a Uniqlo cardigan or sweater can add a perfect layer of warmth to any outfit.
I also love that every piece is made with high quality materials such as 100% extra fine merino, souffle yarn, and 100% cashmere. Think smooth, light, warm, and non-itchy. The range of colors is also a huge plus, whether you're looking for something neutral and subtle or want to make a statement, Uniqlo's got you covered.
There's something for everyone and every outfit this autumn. Head in store or online at uniqlo.com.au to shop Uniqlo's knitwear collection.
Thank you so much to Uniqlo for making this episode of Shameless possible. Alrighty, Mish. So while Lisa Marie's birth may have been a high point in their relationship, things are about to go downhill for Priscilla and Elvis. So about 2 months after Lisa was born, Priscilla wrote the following in her diary. Elvis is insisting that I keep up with my regular checkups, taking care of both of us like a doting father. But I've been feeling lonely for him since the baby's birth. He's still withdrawn. It's been 2 months and he still hasn't touched me. I'm getting concerned.
While Elvis loved being a dad, the way he thought about Priscilla pretty much completely changed after she became a mother. And if you've been triggered by any of the previous quotes we've read out before,
Just brace yourself for this one.
As per Elvis and me, when Elvis's mother was alive, they had been unusually close. Elvis even told her about his amatory adventures. But now I was a mother and he was uncertain how to treat me. He had mentioned before we were married that he had never been able to make love to a woman who'd had a child.
Yeah.
Just doesn't stop with this guy. It's like if you wrote a list of all the things that
Also that link between having like a really unusually close relationship with your mother and then your wife becoming a mother and not knowing what the nature of that relationship is quite odd to me.
I feel like Freud would have a field day with this.
Yeah, some thoughts. Now, Priscilla was unfulfilled and Elvis was committed to making 3 movies a year, which meant he was away a lot. So she had a lot of spare time on her hands and she picked up some hobbies. She actually started some dance lessons several times a week and soon developed feelings for her dance instructor, a 45-year-old guy named Mark. We don't actually know his last name. Priscilla and Mark actually began a short-lived affair.
Priscilla wrote of this, Mark was charismatic and I was particularly vulnerable. In lieu of a passionate marriage, dance was becoming my life. I had a brief affair and decided to end it. I came out of it realizing I needed much more out of my relationship with Elvis.
Yeah, now it's not actually clear if Priscilla and Elvis ever discussed this particular affair at all, but we do know that it happened, that it was short-lived, and that it didn't result in divorce. We also know that it would not be Priscilla's last affair. By 1968, Elvis's backbreaking 3-movie-per-year contract was up, finally, which meant he could move on to new things. Now, he kind of wanted to take this as an opportunity to reinvigorate his career, which, as we know, was in a bit of a flop era.
It was. The television network NBC had actually made an offer to Elvis of his very own television special. It wasn't a movie, but it was a live recorded performance. According to Priscilla, Elvis knew this special was a big step in his career. He could not fail. For 2 straight months, he worked harder than on all of his movies combined. It was the most important event of his life. Because this is a story about Priscilla and Elvis, not the life and career of Elvis Presley, we won't get too in the weeds of this. All you need to know is that when the 1968 Elvis Presley television special aired, it was a monumental success.
Absolutely it was. It essentially turned Elvis's career completely on its head. And while it wasn't like a vulgar show by any means, it did strip him of his family-friendly image and recast him as a music legend. As per Priscilla's account of this time, Elvis was quiet and tense while we watched the whole program. But as soon as the call started, we all knew he had a new triumph. He hadn't lost his touch. He was still the king of rock and roll. Now, because this created a renewed demand for his music, he hit the studio in Memphis soon after it aired. Now, these songs skyrocketed up the charts upon release, proving that he was really back in his prime.
Looking to capitalize on that renewed interest, the Colonel quickly booked in a month-long Elvis Presley residency in Las Vegas. After the success of the Las Vegas shows, the Colonel then locked him in for performances for another 5 years, as well as booking in a run of dates around America. Here's a clip of Elvis talking about how much he enjoyed the touring lifestyle.
I just missed it. I missed the closeness of an audience, of a live audience. So just as soon as I got out of the movie contracts, I started to do live performances again.
Yeah. Now, just a reminder, even though Elvis clearly wanted to tour overseas, and there was obviously demand for him around the world, the Colonel was very careful to only book Elvis on shows within the US because, as we know, the Colonel would very likely have not been allowed back into the US if he ever left because he didn't hold an American passport. Now, international or not, the schedule was grueling, as Priscilla recalled. From 1971 on, he toured more than any other artist, 3 weeks at a time with no days off and 2 shows on Saturdays and Sundays. I did not realize the extent to which Elvis's touring was going to separate us and that this, in fact, was the beginning of the end.
Elvis began to ask Priscilla to remain at home while he toured instead of coming with him, which, you know, historically she would typically do here and there. Eventually, it was as though Priscilla and Elvis were living completely separate lives, particularly given Elvis had multiple homes around the country that he would choose to stay at before going home to his wife and child. As he struggled to cope with the highs and lows of being on tour, he actually increased his dependence on pills. Here's what Priscilla wrote. The chances of our marriage surviving were slim indeed as long as he continued to live apart from Lisa and me. I had trouble believing that Elvis was always faithful, and the more he kept us apart, the more my suspicions grew. Our marriage was now part-time.
Yeah, in light of the part-time marriage, Priscilla actually began another affair. This time it was with a man named Mike Stone, a karate expert who she'd started taking lessons with. As observed in Careless Love, she was 26 years old now and increasingly self-confident. She knew the rules but was not willing to play anymore. Now, along with the affair and long stretches of time away from Elvis, Priscilla began to realize that her life and marriage were not normal. She said, I had a chance to observe marriages outside our immediate circle, where the woman had just as much say as a man in everyday decisions and long-term goals. Elvis had fashioned me into the instrument of his will. I lovingly yielded to his influence, trying to satisfy his every desire, and now he wasn't here. It's pretty powerful.
I love this part of the story when, like, Priscilla finds herself.
Yeah, and realizes that she just doesn't want to do it anymore.
She's not putting up with the bullshit anymore. Yeah. Eventually, things reached a breaking point in their marriage. One evening, in between shows in Las Vegas, Elvis apparently called Priscilla up to their suite, and while he was under the influence, forcefully made love to her. That's a quote from the book. It was uncomfortable and unlike any other time he'd made love to me before, Priscilla wrote, but he explained, this is how a real man makes love to his woman.
Yeah, the next day, Priscilla decided it was time to leave for good. Now, when Elvis asked her if she was leaving to be with another man, she told him, it's not that you've lost me to another man. You've lost me to a life of my own. I am finding myself for the first time. Elvis and Priscilla were officially divorced on October 9, 1973. Now, they famously left the courthouse holding hands after the proceedings, which Priscilla essentially attributed to their enduring love for one another.
They agreed to share custody of Lisa Marie, and it seemed as though this arrangement worked pretty well. Priscilla did have reservations because of Elvis's rock and roll lifestyle, though. As per People magazine, Lisa Marie moved with her mother to LA after the split, but often visited her father, who tended to treat her with awestruck extravagance. When she wanted to see a movie, he rented the theatre. When she wanted to ride a carousel, he took over the amusement park. When she complained once on the phone from LA that she had never seen the snow, Elvis fired up his jet, named the Lisa Marie, sent it to LA to pick her up, and flew her to Utah, where she romped in the powder for 20 minutes. Cost of the brief encounter with Winter, more than $3,000.
Yeah, once again, I feel like it was up to Priscilla to do much of the actual parenting. Now, after the divorce, Elvis's health really suffered. The excitement of performing had worn off, as the Colonel had committed him to the same show over and over in Las Vegas for years to come. Now, once again, he increased his dependence on pills to cope, as per Elvis and me. Elvis started forgetting lyrics and resorting to sheet music on stage. He was acting erratic by ignoring the audience and playing to the band. A few shows were cancelled and no one could predict whether or not he'd appear on stage.
Yeah, we found one review from one of Elvis's final shows in Las Vegas. The review read, after sitting through Elvis Presley's closing night performance, one walks away wondering how much longer it can be before the end comes, perhaps suddenly, and why the king of rock and roll would subject himself to possible ridicule by going on stage so ill-prepared.
Yeah. Now, Priscilla also noted that Elvis had said previously that he didn't expect to live past 40. She wrote, "We've all made such statements, but with Elvis, the thought was deep-seated and chronic. His mother Gladys had died at 42, and like Gladys, he wanted to go before his father, sensing that he himself couldn't bear another loss." Now, a lot was said about Elvis's final years, unfair comments about his appearance and weight, his addiction to pills, and his erratic performances. There's an author called Sally A. Hodel who actually wrote the book Elvis, Destined to Die Young, and she actually said this of Elvis's pill use. "Everything with Elvis has to be looked at through a historical lens. In 1956, they didn't understand that these pills could become addictive. And by the 70s, he's an insomniac. By then, he really needs a lot of medication to achieve any form of sleep. And he's taking things like Valium to achieve sleep because he literally cannot sleep any other way. His doctor tried at one point to see if he could sleep without anything. I think he was awake for 3 days. They finally had to give him medication just so he could sleep." He was just so far gone by this point. And I think Sally's point about the time and how little they knew about these pills is so important to know.
100%. The drug misuse wasn't the only issue going on here as well. Although the Colonel denied this, there are many reports that the Colonel had significant gambling debts he needed to repay. And in order to do so, he needed to keep booking Elvis, regardless of how dire Elvis's physical or emotional state were. These are like two men who just seem to be, I don't know, on a train headed for absolute disaster.
Totally. In The Searcher, Priscilla said of this, "Elvis outgrew Colonel Parker as an artist, but he didn't know how to cut strings." In Careless Love, the author, Peter Gorelnik, kind of observed the same thing. He wrote, "If the Colonel had come right out and said what was on his mind, Elvis probably would have just blown. And if Elvis had expressed any of his own resentment, Colonel might have said things he could never take back. So they continued to circle around each other warily, like an old married couple locked in a relationship from which neither could see any escape." Now, as for Priscilla, immediately after her divorce, she actually moved in with Mike Stone, although the relationship ended a few years later in 1975.
Yeah, we're fast forwarding a tiny bit now. We're in 1977 when Elvis was 42 and Priscilla was 32. Their child, Lisa Marie, is 9 years old at this point in the timeline. Elvis had a series of girlfriends after his marriage breakdown with Priscilla, but by 1977, he did have a partner. She was the 21-year-old Ginger Eldon. This was a strange relationship for a few reasons. Obviously, there's the two-decade age gap, but there's also the fact that Elvis seemed to be more enamored with Ginger than Ginger was into him.
Yeah, very weirdly, Ginger's mother was particularly invested in her relationship with Elvis as well. She would often make comments to the press about it, which didn't earn Ginger any favours with Elvis's family and friends. As per Careless Love, she seemed to Elvis's friends like some high school kid flattered by all the attention but unsure of what to make of it, guided more by her mother's ambitions than by any deep inner feelings of her own. Like it or not, though, Elvis's entire existence was dominated by Ginger. In fact, he became pretty dependent on Ginger for emotional support and hated being separated from her. I mean, it's kind of a strange turn of events given when he was on tour, he didn't want Priscilla to accompany him. Now he was at a point in his life where he refused to go on tour without Ginger next to him.
It was like he was addicted to Ginger.
Yeah.
Yeah. In January 1977, he proposed to her and she said yes, although, according to Careless Love, sometimes she wondered just what she had gotten herself into. As the year 1977 progressed, Elvis continued to perform live to horrid reviews. As per Careless Love, the reviews of his performances ranged from concern for his health to perplexity over how little he seemed to care, with one columnist in Detroit simply declaring that he stunk the joint out. It all seemed to go right past Elvis, whose world was now confined almost entirely to his room.
Yeah, now he was isolated and almost all of his entourage at this point in time had moved on to different things. I mean, keep in mind, these people are entering their 40s. They have like proper adult lives to attend to and they couldn't just hang out with Elvis anymore and goof around. So he felt lonely, resentful and abandoned. What's more, and I think a really important thing to note at this point, three of his former friends slash bodyguards had written a tell-all book about their relationship with Elvis called Elvis, What Happened? The book was due to come out in July 1977, and Elvis was naturally tortured by all the kinds of secrets he imagined would be included in this book, not to mention just feeling deeply hurt by people you were once close with.
Can you imagine the anxiety? Like, imagine if you find out that people who were very close to you, who witnessed you at your best and worst moments,
that's awful,
have written this book together and it's coming out in the impending months.
I actually think it's one of the worst things you can do.
No matter, horrific.
No matter how that relationship ended, I do think it's the marker of quite a bad person to go and do that.
Does it change it for you at all that these were people on the payroll? Like, maybe if it was just your friends or family, that would feel particularly evil.
I don't think he could notice the difference between payroll and friends.
You're so right. Yeah, you couldn't. Yeah, it's just so dire. The few friends that Elvis did have left were growing more and more concerned for him. I mean, a run of tour dates was approaching, scheduled for August 1977, but it was clear that Elvis was in no physical or mental state to perform. According to Careless Love, Elvis told everyone he was still looking forward to the tour, but at the same time, he did nothing to get ready for it.
Yeah, now many fans have blamed the Colonel for not stepping in and giving Elvis a break, but he defended himself in a rare interview after Elvis's death. He said, "I know one thing. When I told him to slow down, he said, 'I want to play more dates.' And I said, 'Well, I don't think you should.' And he said, 'Well, it's what I want to do.' He was very unhappy, so he started touring all over again."
On August 16, 1977, at Graceland, Ginger woke to find that Elvis wasn't next to her in bed. She went looking for him, and when she entered the bathroom, she found him on the floor unconscious. An ambulance was quickly called, and in typical Elvis Presley fashion, there were about 12 people crowding around the bathroom when the emergency services arrived. They found no vital signs, and there was nothing anyone could do. Elvis Presley was dead at 42 years old.
Yeah, I think this is another one of those narrative tangents we could go down with Elvis, like what caused his death. There's been many pieces of content written and produced about this. But what we know is that after Elvis died, Dr. Nick did face an investigation for allegedly overprescribing pills to Elvis, and many fans thought it was the drugs that killed Elvis. However, apparently his autopsy didn't indicate that the pills had anything to do with it. I mean, the autopsy seemed to indicate that it was cardiac arrhythmia or a massive heart attack that caused his death. There is a deep rabbit hole of information and investigations about what actually caused Elvis' death, not to mention longstanding conspiracy theories that perhaps he's still alive. I think it's worth Googling if you're interested in that line of thought.
Yeah.
But the autopsy is the autopsy.
Yeah. Elvis's close friend, Joe Esposito, was actually tasked with sharing the news of his death. And the first person he told was Colonel Parker.
Yeah, as per Careless Love, Colonel's reaction was impossible to read. There was a moment of what Joe could only interpret as stunned silence. Then the old man started to enumerate all the things they would have to do, starting with cancelling the tour. There was no time for nostalgia in the Colonel's world. Next, Joe had to call Priscilla. Now, for context, 9-year-old Lisa Marie was actually staying with Elvis at the time. She had to be physically locked out of the bathroom while her unresponsive father was in there, as she kind of tried to find out what was going on. As per Careless Love, Priscilla received the news with much the same shock and recognition that Joe might have expected. "How was Lisa doing?" she asked through her tears as he tried to reassure her that Lisa would be all right.
So sad. In a private moment before the funeral, Priscilla and Lisa approached Elvis's open casket. Priscilla wrote in her memoir, "Together we stood over him emotional. Lisa took my hand and we placed a sterling silver bracelet depicting a mother and child's clasped hands on his right wrist. I knew my life would never be the same." On the day of Elvis's funeral, Colonel Parker asked Vernon, Elvis's father, to sign a contract that extended his tenure as Elvis's manager. Priscilla had a fairly charitable view of this. She wrote in her memoir, "The Colonel acted quickly, fearful that with Elvis gone, Vernon would be too distraught to handle correctly the many proposals and propositions that would be in the offing." It is a sympathetic lens.
Yes, it is.
I don't know if I share it.
Well, I think we have to tell the rest of the story and then the listeners can decide. Now, there is a slightly different interpretation of this conversation in Careless Love. Vernon's gaunt, handsome face reflected a sorrow almost beyond expression. It was hard to tell how much he was able to take in as he assented almost mutely to the Colonel's every argument. So Vernon signed this deal and the management of Elvis's career, even beyond the grave, to the Colonel. While media coverage about Elvis's final years was often cruel, Elvis's death had a massive impact on the world. I mean, despite his failing recent performances, he was still considered the king of rock and roll and his fans were distraught.
Case in point, about 50,000 people reportedly turned up to the front of the Memphis funeral home on the day of Elvis's funeral. Curiously, Priscilla decided to send her daughter, Lisa, to a summer camp, hoping that there she'd be sheltered from the salacious media reports about her father's death. It's tricky. I don't know if a summer camp would shield you, but then I guess you'd feel hopeless. What do you do with a small child who...
It's not like the average scenario. You've got one of the most famous people in the world passing away. I have no idea what the right or wrong thing to do with. I can imagine that feeling like the smart thing to do, to be like, get away, try to be normal.
I can imagine making the wrong call. Because like you're just...
I'm not even sure this is the wrong call though. I'm not sure what the right call is. It's such a unique scenario and I don't think any of us would know unless we were in it. Now, in a case of kind of eerie timing, that book that I mentioned earlier, Elvis, What Happened, was published just 2 weeks before Elvis's death. Now, while interest in the book was kind of, you know, middling when it was first published, after he died, it went on to sell 3 million copies.
They would have made so much money off of that book. We wanted to finish this episode by pivoting slightly to discuss the really fascinating life and sad life of Lisa Marie Presley. There is a lot to it, so we will kind of cover the main dot points, but we feel like it's pretty important to discuss what happened to Lisa Marie after her father died.
Yeah, 100%. Now, as Elvis's only child, Lisa was the sole heir to the Presley estate after Vernon's death in 1979 and her great-grandmother's death in 1980. But she was like still a child at this point, so someone needed to take charge of the estate until she turned 25, which was when she was set to take over as specified in Elvis's will.
Yeah, the handling of that estate got a little complicated, but the basics are that Priscilla was named a trustee in 1980, and that's when she founded the Elvis Presley Enterprises to oversee the management of the estate. 1980 was a pretty intense year for Elvis Presley's family. Not only had Vernon and Minnie, Elvis's grandmother, died, but there were also two separate trials going on simultaneously. First, Dr. Nick was under investigation for overprescribing pills to Elvis, possibly resulting in his death. And Colonel Parker was sued by Elvis Presley Enterprises, which we know was headed up by Priscilla, for the mismanagement of Elvis's career.
Yeah, now in his trial, Dr. Nick was acquitted and Colonel Parker and Elvis Presley Enterprises settled out of court and his involvement in the Elvis Presley estate was finally terminated for good. Now, we know that Elvis had money problems for several years before he died, but no one actually knew how bad things were until after his death. Now, when Priscilla took control of the estate, his assets had dwindled to $5 million and he had lots of debt. However, thanks to some pretty savvy management from Priscilla, by the time Lisa inherited control of the estate in 93, its worth had swelled to $100 million.
During her adolescence, Lisa Marie had struggled with drug use. She once told People magazine, "I was just in that rebellious stage and drugs were a part of that. A lot of people would ask, why did you do that if your father died from drugs? But at that age, I didn't look at it like that. I have to learn things by myself."
It's really interesting when we talk about Elvis Presley's death because, as we said, the autopsy said one thing and then you've got Lisa Marie saying, well, there was some level of involvement to drugs. Like, it's a bit confusing and I understand why people are confused about it.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to have, like, even a coroner explain this. I imagine that such prolonged drug use for so long would have an impact on your heart.
Totally. Now, by the time Lisa inherited the estate, she was sober, married, and a mother. Her husband, aspiring musician Danny Keough, was a Scientologist. Now, Lisa actually already had a relationship with the Church of Scientology when she met Danny, as Priscilla had introduced her to Scientology when she was a teen. Now, Her children, Danielle Riley Keough, was born in 1989, and her son, Benjamin Storm Keough, was born in 1993.
Yeah, Lisa's love life was pretty turbulent. In total, she was married four times across her life. Here's what she had to say about the end of her marriage to Danny. She said, "Even if you have talent, which Danny does, you immediately become Mr. Presley in the world's eyes, and it eventually tore the marriage apart. That has been a constant problem for me. If I'm going to be a musician, they become Mr. Presley and they get squashed and they get resentful and we end up going after each other. After Danny, I thought maybe I should be with someone who is famous. I married Michael."
Yeah, we're not just talking about any Michael either. Lisa Marie Presley's second marriage was to Michael Jackson. Now, she actually married Michael 20 days after her divorce from Danny was finalized. It was a pretty intense time in Michael Jackson's life and career. He was in the midst of child molestation allegations and apparently leant quite heavily on Lisa Marie for support. That marriage didn't last either. In 1996, when Lisa was 28, her marriage to Michael ended after 2 years. According to Lisa, though, their relationship continued on and off for the next 4 years.
Yeah, Lisa actually did a pretty interesting interview with Oprah Winfrey in 2009. This was after Michael Jackson had died, but she kind of drew parallels between who Michael Jackson was and the kind of person Elvis Presley was. We're going to play you a snippet of it now.
"The one thing that correlates with Michael and with my father on this subject is that they had the luxury of creating whatever reality around them they wanted to create. They could have the kinds of people who were going to go with their program or not go with their program. And if they weren't, then they could be disposed of."
Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe she was craving the same kind of figure in her life, the same kind of energy. I imagine they would have similar energies.
Well, you're talking about the biggest musicians of their era. Like, it's a pretty big parallel. Now, her next husband was the actor Nicolas Cage, who she met in 2001 and married and divorced in 2002. By 2003, she actually followed in her father's footsteps and embarked on a solo music career. Now, her debut album, To Whom It May Concern, was released in April that year. And though, of course, she was plagued by comparisons to her father, the general consensus seemed to be that she actually could hold her own.
Yeah, take this from the LA Times as an example. In her intimate North Hollywood show, Lisa proves herself easily. With music that leans more into hard-edged pop than the rockabilly drive of Hound Dog, her voice demonstrates character and conviction. Lisa's music career was decently successful, but if we're being honest, we're not the authority on music. I want to put that out there. But I can't name a single Lisa Marie Presley song.
No, I agree with that.
Being self-aware, though. Be self-aware.
For the sake of culture, be self-aware. Now, in 2004, Lisa made a pretty massive move and sold the majority of her father's estate and assets. She actually kept Graceland, but sold the rights to his name and image in a deal that was worth around $100 million USD at the time. Now, in 2006, she actually married producer Michael Lockwood. And 2 years later, at the age of 40, she gave birth to twin girls. In 2016, though, after 10 years of marriage, she filed for divorce from Michael.
While in recovery from the birth of her twins, Lisa was apparently prescribed opioids by a doctor, which led to a long struggle with addiction. In 2019, Lisa addressed this when she wrote, "It only took a short-term prescription of opioids in the hospital for me to feel the need to keep taking them. It's a difficult path to overcome this dependence and put my life back together. Even in recent years, I've seen too many people I love struggle with addiction and die tragically from this epidemic. It is time for us to say goodbye to shame about addiction." 1 year after Lisa wrote this, her son Benjamin tragically died by suicide. So that was in 2020. She lost her son.
Yeah, just awful and like incredibly and understandably traumatic for the family. 3 years later, more tragedy would strike the family when Lisa Marie herself died due to complications from a recent bariatric surgery she'd undergone. She was just 54 years old, as per the New York Times. Though Miss Presley's music career never reached the heights her father's had achieved, his influence was evident in her music and her lyrics. "Someone turned the lights out there in Memphis," she sang in Lights Out, a song from To Whom It May Concern, her debut album released in 2003. "That's where my family's buried and gone."
On that rather sad note, we're going to touch base again with where the now 78-year-old Priscilla Presley is. As she expertly led the charge at Elvis Presley Enterprises, Priscilla also embarked on a pretty successful acting career as well. Her most notable role was probably Jenna Wade in the American soap Dallas. She starred in 143 episodes between the years 1983 and 1988.
Yeah. Go girl. In 1985, the book we've been talking about for the last three episodes was published, Elvis and Me, written by Priscilla Presley. The book was a revelation, I think for obvious reasons now.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and a New York Times bestseller. According to reports, it sold over 1 million copies.
I actually recommend, if you're a real pop culture lover, which I'm guessing you all are, you've been here with us for three episodes. I really enjoyed reading this book. Yeah. It's really well done. So as far as celebrity profiles are concerned memoirs are concerned, read it.
I also think, as you can probably tell through, you know, the last three episodes, she has pretty intimate recollections of her time with Elvis. And I think it provided an insight into their lives that no one had seen before. Elvis really did interviews, in-depth personal interviews while he was alive. So I think for a lot of people, this is the first time they really understood who he was, what he was about, and the nature of their relationship together.
And who she was.
Yeah.
I mean, so much had been said about her over the years. From the time she was 14, she finally got a chance to write her own story, I think.
Yeah, I think the other thing that we haven't even had time to talk about as well is that Priscilla Presley's longest relationship wasn't actually with Elvis at all. She was with the Brazilian screenwriter Marco Garibaldi for 22 years. Yeah. They actually met in 84. They had a son together about 3 years later, the musician Navarone Garibaldi. And in 2006, Mish, they ended their relationship.
Yeah, I found this detail fascinating. According to some tabloid reports, at the beginning of their romance, Priscilla had Marco sign an agreement that if they did break up one day, he would not be allowed to write a book about her. Now, you might find that interesting. When I first read that, I was like, that's odd, given she wrote a book about Elvis. I think the reason that might have happened is because another ex of Priscilla's actually wrote a book all about their relationship. Get this, it was called Priscilla, Elvis and Me. It was published 3 years after her book, Elvis and Me, came out.
I don't know how to feel about this because I'm like, that's not fair. But then I'm like, I guess she wrote a book about her ex.
Everyone's writing books
about each other.
Everyone. I can tell from a little Google that Priscilla, Elvis and Me was maybe snarkier than what Priscilla did.
Right. Now she has four grandchildren and one great-grandchild as well.
Yeah. Taking things back to her memoir, though, at the very end of her memoir, Priscilla reflected on the impact that her husband, her ex-husband Elvis, had had on her life. She wrote, "I learned from Elvis, often, sadly, from his mistakes. I learned that having too many people around can sap your energies. I learned the price of trying to make everyone happy. I learned to confront people and to face issues, two steps Elvis had avoided. He was and remains the greatest influence in my life."
Yeah, wow. I mean, I have no doubt about that. This was someone she met when she was 14. He shaped the adult who she became, for better or worse.
Yeah.
It's a very complicated story.
It's one of my favorite, as awful as some of the details are, it's one of the most fascinating stories we've actually done on Scandal.
Totally. There's just so much there, and it makes me want to go and just read so much more. Even though we've spent weeks and weeks in this, I still want to know more.
Same.
Gosh, big thank you as always to our pop culture journalist, Eilish Gilligan, for doing all the work here with us. You are amazing. A big thank you as well to our audio editor, Annabelle Lee. Guys, if you want to come and support the show, come and follow us on Instagram at Shameless Podcast or TikTok at Shameless_podcast.
If you have time, chuck us a 5-star review on whatever podcast app you're listening. We would appreciate it.
That would be great. Bye.
Bye.
Shameless Media.
This podcast was recorded on Wurundjeri land. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land.
Oh, hi, it's Annabelle Lee and Louis Hansen here. We are your hosts of Everybody Has a Secret.
Woo!
Woo! We are here essentially just to let you know that we drop episodes every week now. Every damn Friday morning, we are in your ears.
That is so exciting. What a time to be in your ear holes. So essentially, each episode, we unpack the real life secrets of our listeners. So this is for everyone who loves, you know, just a little bit of gossip in their lives, which, let's be real, Annabelle, is all of us.
It's absolutely all of us. Don't lie. You all love gossip. So if you want to listen to our show, please do head to your favourite podcast app and listen now.
See you there.
Bye.